Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Greetings, this is Adila Barnes. Welcome to my show, Adila, on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul, where we will get up close with our radio guests. Before I introduce you to my very special guest for today, I'd like to share with you my thought for the day. It is, no one can dub you with dignity. That's yours to claim. Odetta, American singer, who incidentally I worked with in the Bay Area, and so it is. That quote certainly speaks to our guest today, who exemplifies dignity in both her person and her work. She is an Academy Award nominee for Best Supporting Actress for the award-winning film The Color Purple, and the upcoming BET series Being Mary Jane, with actor Gabrielle Union, that will debut in January. Margaret, welcome to Adila.
Well, thank you, Adila, and happy holiday to you.
Happy holidays to you. I know that song sure brought back memories, didn't
it? Yes, it certainly did. Oh, hot North Carolina.
Hot North Carolina. Well, we're going to get to that in a minute. We're going to talk about that in a minute. And before we do that, I'd like to take a moment to just kind of go back in time like I do with all of my guests to allow our listeners to get a sense of who you are as the person. We know public images and celebrity images, but there are a lot of things about us sometimes that people really have no idea about and find fascinating. So I'd like to do what I do with everyone, and that is to start from the beginning, and I'd like to ask you where you were born.
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Lots of cotton. And my mother helped my grandfather chop cotton when she was young in the snow. I never knew that cotton grew in the snow.
I thought it was summertime when it grew.
Well, I guess it's all kinds of weather, whatever. But
wow.
She missed a lot of school because she was the oldest of 13, and they needed help. My grandfather needed help, and so she was by his side. And then there were stories when they were chopping cotton with snakes. There was some kind of a snake that would jump up to see where you were and then shoot after you, and you would have to zigzag. Boy, lots of interesting tales in Oklahoma.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm learning something new because, and I'm sure some of our listeners are as well, because most of us think of cotton in the summertime when it's hot and people are out there with their kerchiefs and, you know, sweating and wiping and all of that, but it sounds like really cotton can grow year-round. It's a very sturdy crop, it sounds like.
That's why we need to talk about our stories and families, to share these things, because otherwise we're left to just learning what we see in the movies or what textbooks decide to tell us.
Decide, yes. And that may not be the whole story.
Absolutely not.
So you were born in a place called Mangum,
Oklahoma. It's a little bitty town. If you're passing through, you can't blink because then you'll miss it.
What city is it near?
I think it's near Altus, maybe.
Okay.
I've heard people talk about Altus. I remember I was singing in Jakarta, and I used to do Dolly Parton's song, Islands in the Stream, and my little patter before the song, I introduced it with saying how it sounded across the tracks and how I sang it. And I said, I know nobody knows where Altus is. Now, were you talking about Jakarta? Now, Jakarta, and somebody in the way back said, I know where it is.
They knew where it was. So Jakarta is in Oklahoma, too.
No. I'm talking about I was singing in Jakarta, in Indonesia.
Oh, that Jakarta.
Jakarta, right. And
got
I just
it.
I just assume nobody ever knows where Mangum, Oklahoma is. And that one person, when he called it out in the audience, I know where it is. I almost died.
In Indonesia, how likely is that? That is so funny.
Yeah. That was
before
all the uproaring and whatever they're doing there.
In Jakarta?
Yeah, right.
Now, how old were you when you left Oklahoma? I know you left and came to California.
Well, that's why the stories were very important to me, because I really grew up in San Diego, went there when I was very young.
Okay.
And grew up in a Navy housing project. San Diego is a Navy town, particularly back in the 50s, because the Navy was more the military that was being used at that time in with our wars. And so, but it was almost the South because San Diego, the weather is so beautiful. When the Navy people came from the South and then decided to settle there, they continued with their ideology from the South.
So there was a strong Southern sensibility there.
San Diego was a very prejudiced city at that time.
They brought that with them.
Absolutely.
I see.
Diehards.
Wow. So how was it growing up in San Diego? How old were you when you moved there?
I was about 2 years old.
Oh, you were tiny.
Oh, yes, yes.
Very tiny. And how was it growing up in San Diego?
Well, you know, I have a lot of fond memories from childhood because, you know, we weren't worried about the things that kids are worried about, you know, parents have to worry about their children now. I mean, just recently it was that, what, another Tyrone case?
Oh, I just heard about that
yesterday.
Someone
got shot, a teenager, because his music was loud. Those kind of things weren't happening then. And we didn't have children being accosted and disappearing. So, and it was like a village. Even though we were poor, we didn't know we were poor. Our parents were there with, you know, we, if I was doing something that a neighbor saw me doing it, they'd say, "Margaret Jo, does your mother know you're doing that?" Ooh, I would stop, boy.
That sounds like my little town of Oroville, California. I think that was everywhere around the country. Yes.
There were a lot of good things about the neighborhoods at that time. I mean, I didn't know I was poor until I had to go to school outside of the neighborhood. And my school was in a very elite area.
Ah.
The good thing about it is that it was all white. I'm not saying that was a good thing about it, but I got a very good education.
Right. Right. Now, your father was in the Navy, so did your family travel widely? Or
No.
Did he come to San Diego?
By the time he went there, we got there, he just went into the reserves. He didn't have to. We didn't do a lot of traveling. So we were pretty stationary, which was a good thing.
That is a good thing. Wow. And we were talking a little bit about your mother before we came on the line. I was going to say I couldn't find anything on her in my research, but you did share a little bit about her earlier and that she was the eldest of 13. My mother was the eldest of 12, and so it's interesting that our two mothers were not only the eldest, but came from very, very large families and from the South.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But most of California people have migrated here from the South.
Yes. You know? Many have. And I learned something from you when we were talking before the show began. You shared with me that you're an only child. Unlike me, there were seven of us, but you were an only child.
An only child. But it taught me to be tough because growing up, this was, like I said, it was a Navy housing project, and most of the kids had lots of brothers and sisters, and so I was always the one that got bullied, but I stood up for myself.
Good for
and
you.
And I had to, I was a little skinny thing. I looked like olive oil, I tell you.
I can see that image right now, yes.
I think that I got this spirit in me from my mother because she used to fight boys for her younger brothers, you know.
Wow.
But I would like
himself.
Bluff them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think that that's how I became the part of becoming the actor that I am, because I learned how to bluff and be who I wasn't and act crazy. And I think I never got beat up because they said, "Well, this is crazy. I ain't going to bother her." You know how the kids would all kind of stand around you and make a circle and push you into one another.
Yeah.
And,
or they
put the little ice cream,
they
put this ice cream stick on your shoulder and you're supposed to brush it off, dare them, all of that.
Oh, boy, the things we experience as children. Now, you said that twice you said you lived in the Navy projects. Navy residential housing has projects or?
Well, it was an area for the Navy families to live. And then after a while, it became maybe you might say people who were lower income and Section 8 and that kind of thing. So that's why I called it a ghetto.
I see. So by that time, all the Navy people had moved out. Is that right? And it became a project or? Or they were mingled
there
in
was
with some, Navy
it was
people.
Kind of a mixture because it was low income.
I got you.
You know, and but
you.
Then slowly it became over the years a very depressed area.
I see now what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in my research, I learned that you were a freedom writer. Now, when that comes to mind, I think about that summer, Freedom Summer. So explain to me what was meant in my research when you were referred to as a freedom writer. How
well,
do you mean that?
I guess I really need to look up what is the definition of a freedom writer, but I'll share the story. I was like 11, 12 years old, and I was supposed to have been going on the Greyhound bus to visit my grandparents in Oklahoma. And, you know, the Greyhound bus, one of the stops was New Mexico. You get off to use the bathroom and all of that and get something to eat. And I ran into these young kids. Well, to me, they were older. I mean, they seemed like young adults. They were probably 18, 19 years old. And I met them at the counter, and they were telling me that they were going to the South to help people vote, you know.
Yes.
And all
Freedom
of that.
Summer.
And I got so excited. I said, can I go? Can I go? So here we go. And they were white. And I would imagine they were Jewish. And they had their Volkswagen station wagon. Remember those?
Oh, yes. I used to have one.
Yes. And we went to a place called Itabena, Mississippi to help with the voter registration. And that was quite an experience. And this last election reminded me an awful lot about it. It brought back a lot of memories.
I bet.
But I was out there marching for equal rights and getting all involved emotionally, and got run out of town because we went to another little town. I don't know what the town was, but that's where they were trying some kids. They were on trial, and so we got
the African American.
African American. They had been in jail. Now they were like going to go to this little trial, and so. I'm in the courthouse, and I noticed, even at that age, there was no American flag, only a Confederate flag.
Isn't that something?
Only a Confederate flag, I'm telling you. So they're making these statements, and I'm making my comments. I'm sitting down in the pew, and this big white man kept looking. He was sitting in front of me, and he'd turn around every now and then when I would say, "Oh, that is so stupid. Why are they saying that?" Did it? He would look at me slowly and then turn around again. Well, I didn't know that was the sheriff. Next thing I knew, we're on the bus, and I go back, and a lot of people have volunteered to put us up, and so I'm in the house that is putting me up, my lodging and all, and here comes some SNCC people saying, Margaret, you got to get out of town. The sheriff is looking for you. The sheriff is looking for you. And so if you don't dare go to jail in that little town at that time.
No.
Because what would happen is that from time to time they would say, oh, we released them, but nobody ever saw them again.
What?
So, I mean, you guess what happened. I mean, they got a lot of swamps in Mississippi.
Oh, yes.
A lot of
And we know
people,
of cases where we do know what happened to some who went down there, especially
absolutely.
That summer.
Absolutely. So they got me in a car and took me to Alabama. And I got out of town. Now, the funny thing is I did call my mom before going off with them from New Mexico, and I said, Mom, I'm going to go and help people get their vote. Well, a day later, she called my grandparents and said, how come Margaret hasn't called me? How are things? They said, Margaret Jo ain't here. Well, she dreamt that. She didn't realize that wasn't a dream.
That it was really real and you had called.
Absolutely.
And
so
you were
God
12 years old,
all,
Margaret?
Pardon me?
How old were you?
I was like 11, 12.
That is unbelievable.
And
not even a teenager.
I did get hit on the head. So somebody was saying that they were laughing about me doing Roscoe. What was the movie with Martin Lawrence, Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins.
Uh-huh.
where they do kind of like an effect of the ball, softball, hitting me in the head. And it really, because of what I was doing a few weeks ago, or actually a couple of weeks ago now, in the campaign, somebody had mentioned that part, and it just reminded me of getting clubbed in the head when I was at Abena, Mississippi.
Yes,
big police officer hit me in the head. And so that's why I had such a passion about going to Ohio and helping our president.
Yes,
to
yes.
Become
and we're
re-elected.
Going to talk
because
about that.
All
we're going to talk
things,
about that more in a minute. Yes.
You know, because it just took me back to my childhood and the things that we fought for.
Yes.
And
what
just,
a brave young child you were to
well,
do what
crazy.
You did.
I was crazy.
Unbelievable. No, I wouldn't call you crazy. It sounds to me like you were someone who had a calling and you knew there was a need and you did it. We're going to take a station break for a second and just introduce who we are in case someone's just now tuning in. So I want to take a moment to do that.
Okay.
And for our listeners, you're listening to Blake Radio's Rainbow Soul. This is the show Adila, and my guest today is the very talented and lovely Miss Margaret Avery.
Oh,
so
thank you,
welcome to
Adila.
The show. You're very welcome, and it's very true. So I wanted to kind of move on. We're connecting the dots along your path. You graduated from San Francisco State. Now, I'm curious to know, my longtime friend, Danny Glover, we both were in the Bay Area at the same time. Was he at San Francisco State when you were there?
You know, I don't think so.
Okay.
But I didn't know him then, so he could have been. But the way I met Danny was years mm-hmm. later, much years later. It right here, living in the house that I am now, mm-hmm. I saw him walking down the street in front of the mm-hmm. house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at that time, there were so few blacks up here. If I saw a black, I got excited.
Right.
You know, oh, wow, somebody's up here.
And you have a
here.
Gorgeous home up in
and
the hill.
And, of course,
yes.
he, I mean, boy, you, I mean, if you had seen Danny, like, well, you saw him in Color Purple. I mean,
yeah.
here is this beautiful black man walking down the street. I had just had to come out and say, who are you?
Mm.
And so he was here in Los Angeles doing a play, Othello.
Ah.
And
so at that time, he wasn't a household name. You didn't
recognize
him.
Right. He had never, I had never seen him. He had never been in a
Isn't
film.
Isn't that something?
And he's, and so... he was living with the artistic director of the theater that he was starring in. And so he would walk down the street every day. One day, I was trying to get a little apartment refrigerator into my car. At that time, I had this big LTD Ford.
Oh, yes, I remember those.
I mean, mm-hmm. their trunks are huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped him and I said, hey, Danny, would you help get this refrigerator in my trunk? Because I'm going to get another one and I need to take this one back. And his voice, you know, he said, oh, yeah, baby. Yeah.
Raspy.
I'll help you. So on the Color Purple interview, no, I didn't know who was going to be there.
Right.
You know, and at this point of the interview session, they had narrowed us all down. It, actually, we were kind of cast, but we didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were like the final ones. There wasn't anyone there my type or
mm-hmm.
Danny's type. And I walked in and did my interview, and when I came out, Danny, I saw Danny, and I said, oh, Danny, would you come to the house and help me with my refrigerator? You know,
oh,
I was
that's
just pull,
funny.
I was just pulling his leg.
Did he remember that incident?
Oh, yes, because he knew who I was at that time.
Right.
And so he says, oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I got to go to Santa Monica. And I said, oh, Danny, I'm just teasing.
But, you know, he is so free-hearted. He would have done it.
He would have.
He would have done
it.
I love Danny. He's just wonderful.
Just
well, you know, now that you're talking about the color purple, you kind of got ahead of me, but I'm going to stay with where you are, and I may come back to some other questions I had a little bit later if we have time. But I wanted now to just kind of move into that area of, in that period of your life, and that's we're now talking about 1985 when you were cast in the role of Shug Avery in The Color
yeah.
Purple. Now, how did that life-changing role come to you?
Well, like I mentioned before, I'd been singing in Jakarta, Indonesia, I came back. Now, this is a story where, you know, God intervened.
Mm.
I came back to do my taxes because I learned the hard way. Get your taxes in.
Yes.
And so... And I had all these messages on my machine saying, Margaret, have you heard about The Color Purple? You should get your agent to check it out.
Mm.
Now, those were calls from other actresses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They don't normally share.
No.
You know, I didn't know anything.
Not
about
unless
the color.
They're a different type and they know they're not going to be competing with you.
Well, apparently they had already read for it and knew they wouldn't get it or whatever. But
mm-hmm.
the point is that they thought enough to call me about it. And
that
had never happened before
mm-hmm.
for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I called my agent at that time and said, hey, what's this going on about this Color Purple? And they said, Margaret, we have tried to get you an interview, but Ruben Cannon will not see you. That was the casting director.
Ah, Ruben.
He says, you are just not the type. Well, I wrote Ruben a letter, and he had cast me in many television shows the
mm-hmm.
years before, so I knew him
mm-hmm.
and had even socialized at some point. So I wrote him a letter and I said, Ruben, you haven't seen me in many years. I said, but I really feel I'm ripe for Shug.
Mm.
And if you don't see me, I know where you live. I will sit. I will sit on your porch.
No, you
until
didn't.
Until you come out.
No, you didn't.
Well,
you knew that was your role, I suppose.
He got back to me right away. Now, here's the thing: when people said there's a role in there that you're perfect for, I thought they were thinking of Celie.
Really.
But when I read the book, oh my God, I gravitated right to Shug.
Isn't that something by Margaret, Alice Walker? Yes.
Right. So when I went in to see Ruben, because he graced me with an interview, and he gave me the sides to read, and he says, come back and read for me. That was on a Friday. And I waited and waited and waited all day. You know, Friday's casting people are tired.
Yes.
And I was the last person that he saw. And I read, and he said, you know, Margaret, I know you're not right for the role, but your work deserves to be seen. I want to tape you. And so, and when he said, I know you're not right for the role, he said, he was basing that on what the producers had said he wanted, and that was, I want to say Quincy Jones.
Ah, yes.
And so Quincy really wanted a professional singer.
Uh-huh.
That's what he wanted. And he wasn't focusing so much on the acting. So if it had been up to Q, I wouldn't have never been cast.
Got it.
But the director, Steven Spielberg, was over him. So when I did the interview on the tape, and Ruben was very kind, and I owe the role to him because he gave me the opportunity to be seen.
He sure did.
And
casting directors, for our listeners, are critical in our business because they can either open the door for you to be seen by producers, directors, writers, network brass, or they can shut the door tight. And those people who are the decision makers never even knew you auditioned for the role. They have no idea. So
absolutely.
Casting directors are critical.
Mm-hmm.
And he opened the door for you.
He opened the door for me. And the compliment I got was that Alice Walker and Steven Spielberg were in a room watching the tapes of all the different people who had auditioned. And I understand that, well, Alice told me, she says, you know, when you came on the tape, I just couldn't take my eyes off you. And
that's amazing.
And
she
I thought, that was just such a beautiful thing to hear her say.
Yes, it was. Because she's the one who created the characters.
Absolutely.
So it's even more important that she said that because it came from her creativity that Shug was even born.
Absolutely. And Ruben also told me, he said, when you go in to audition for Steven, he told me what to wear, you know, and he says, hey, go be a little flamboyant. Because I'm really very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
He says, and so I went down on Hollywood Boulevard and got me a big feather, you know, and just kind of made myself a little extravagant, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I always said, Lord, I don't know where this feather's been, but be with me today.
Yeah, and he was. That was your role.
Yes.
And
yes,
boy,
and
did you play it.
And, you know, I never thought about who else was competing with me. And the thing that I really remember was a big lesson for me. After I found out how many other people, big stars, who had auditioned and didn't get it. Now, I'm already cast.
Mm-hmm,
and I'm starting to think about, oh, my God, you mean... She read and she didn't get it.
It's a good thing you didn't know that.
And I was starting to talk myself out of the role. And I just got on my knees and I said, dear God, please take the fear out of me.
Because you already had been cast.
Yes? I'd already been cast. So listeners, we can be our own worst enemy.
Absolutely.
So we have to believe in ourselves and go for it.
That's right. Just
know that if it's in you to do it and you're doing your best, you go for it. Don't even think about anything that's negative
about what,
you know, what are they going to think and, am I going to be as good as so-and-so?
Mm-hmm.
Go for it. Because
that's right.
God
because
is
if
with
your
you.
Name is on it, it's going to come to you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I learned my lesson on that one, and I have to think about that every time, even now when I go and audition. You know, I'm still auditioning.
Well, we all are, I know.
You know.
But you know what? The same thing is true. If the role is for us, we're going to get it. It's going to come to us. And if it has someone else's name, it's theirs. But
mm-hmm.
our turn, surely, if we stay in the game, our turn is going to come.
Yeah. Well, I tell young people, if any of you are listening, it's a very difficult business, and I'm always grateful for the education that I got first. I graduated from San Francisco State, and I went into teaching.
Yes.
I taught a few years, and when I left teaching, I left the Bay Area. I would have stayed there had there been a film industry there. It's such a beautiful area.
It is gorgeous.
But I came down to Southern California with tears in my eyes because here I was, having grown up in poverty and leaving a good solid check every month. But I said, okay, Dr. Martin Luther King, I thought about him saying the dream and I have a dream. And I thought it would be terrible to not pursue what I really wanted to do. So with a lot of nervousness and scared, I mean, when I told my principal I wasn't coming back, I was crying because I was so nervous about it. But I knew I had to do it. And I say, thank goodness for my education, because when I came to Los Angeles, I substituted. And that paid for my photography and the continued acting classes and afforded me all those things that we see now. We can almost do our own printing, with,
yes,
with
that's
pictures
right.
and all. But
that's
at that
right.
time, we didn't. And at that time, we didn't have answering services so prevalent. I mean, and that was expensive and all of those things. So I tell
voicemail on our phones. Didn't even have a phone.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had a phone.
Oh, you did have a cell phone?
Oh, absolutely not. We didn't
that's
phone.
What I'm talking about. We
oh,
didn't
no,
even
no,
have
no,
cell
no.
phones
yeah,
with
right.
voicemail. Mm-hmm.
Right. But I tell kids, the business is always going to be here. Your education.
Yes.
Get your education. Because even at age 50, I went back to school and got a master's.
Wow.
And
what
I
did you get your master's in?
I got in psychology.
Beautiful.
And
of course, your BA was in education, and that's why you were
education.
Teaching in the early days.
And so at
yes.
the time, I was just going back to school for professional growth, personal growth.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
the people that I was in school with, they all knew they wanted to be psychologists. I was
mm-hmm.
just wanting to, I would have a thirst to just learn something other than what films were out there and who was starring and what they were about and all of this stuff. You know, you
mm-hmm,
get tired
mm-hmm.
of shop talking all the time.
Right, right.
So with Aisha, my daughter, having gone away from, I'm experiencing empty nest.
Right.
I could, like, go back to school. And at that time, I was thinking, oh, going to school Monday, Wednesday, Friday, this class, and Tuesday, Thursday, those that's out. They have schools now where you can go. What I did was went all day on Saturdays.
Ah.
And I'd come out looking cross-eyed because they give you so much information.
I bet. You only went one day a week on the weekend?
One day a week, all
day. That's amazing.
Day, from 8 o'clock to 4:30. And
well,
it was
your time
just
was
amazing.
Your own during the week, yeah.
But I say
you
that's
audition.
How God works because I never knew that I would ever go back to school and study psychology. And I learned so much from it.
Mm-hmm.
Learned what it is to grow up in an alcoholic home, how it affects my relationships, the choices that I made as an adult, the kind of men I was attracted to that weren't good for me, just so much. So the
Absolutely.
Personal growth was just invaluable. My partner now of 17 years, I never would have been attracted to him back in the day. And probably he wouldn't have been attracted to me. You know, sometimes
mm-hmm.
you grow out of your ways that aren't
mm-hmm.
good for you. But
mm-hmm.
oftentimes we continue to make the same bad choices
yep.
and not understanding why. And that's
right.
what empowered me.
Because you began to understand yourself more, I would imagine.
Absolutely. And it taught me to have more patience with people.
Mm-hmm.
The more you understand yourself, the more you can understand others. And I think it teaches you compassion.
Yes.
I mean,
and you know, the other thing, as it relates to our career, I went back to school and studied educational psychology. I found that it also supported me in understanding my characters
Absolutely.
As an actor.
Absolutely. Well, now, I wasn't planning on getting a master's. I did get the master's, but they said, now, if you want to get your master's, you have to start seeing clients. That was like in our fourth semester, because
mm-hmm.
it was a two-year program. And I thought, oh, no, I can't see anybody. Oh, heavens, no,
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was that I could see at the venue where I studied, I could see people off the street that come in, and the supervisor would tape the session. We had to get their permission, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And in seeing those sessions myself on tape, I thought, oh, my God, I'm really good. I mean, because as an actor, we... First of all, we have life experience
yes,
after a certain age.
Yes.
The other part of it is that we have presence, and
yes.
you learn to read body language. You've learned sensitivity, And these things that I learned as an actor and with just living life made me a very good therapist. I started getting referrals. The only reason I'm not doing it now is because it conflicts with my acting.
Yeah.
I can't drop clients and say, oh, I'm going to go off and do this film now for it, and I'll see you later. Don't call me, I'll call you. That's
right.
You can't do that.
No.
So, but I'll go to shelters and talk to women and help in what ways I can in that way.
That is so beautiful. We're going to do another station break for those who are joining us, so hold on, Margaret, okay?
Okay.
All right. And for those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to Blake Radio's Rainbow Soul. I'm Adila. And my guest today is Miss Margaret Avery. And she, of course, played Shug Avery in The Color Purple and received an Academy Award nomination for Best Actress in a Supporting Role. So I'm delighted to have you here, Margaret. This is a fascinating conversation that we're having. And what I'd like to do is kind of shift gears a little bit and come back to The Color Purple. And I want to ask you, because a lot of actors and even those who are not yet actors but have a dream of becoming an actor and think, oh, my God, when I get that opportunity to get that special role and I'm really singled out for my work, get my Oscar nomination, perhaps I'll get the Oscar. All the dreams that many actors have of nailing that role that's really going to get the nod by the Academy Award people. How would you say that being nominated for an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for the role of Shug Avery, how did that nomination impact your career as an actor?
Well, it didn't impact as much as I would have liked. I mean, because I haven't done another Color Purple. But what it did for me, it was kind of like a double sword, because once you do something really, really good, and that was my first A film, because up until that time I'd be in a lot of B films. But once you see yourself stretch, you want to keep stretching, you want to keep growing.
Yes.
And roles for women of color just weren't there. Now remember, we didn't have Spike Lee, and we didn't have John Singleton, and any of these other filmmakers, Tyler Perry. There was nothing out there. So when we did Color Purple, I didn't work for 2 years.
After the nomination?
After the nomination. And at that time, no, you're talking about 27 years ago. At that time, I tried to get a manager, and I went to one of the top managers in Hollywood, and what did he say? Well, what can I do with you?
He actually said that.
He said that. So
I'm speechless.
I have my stories. And even television, it was hard for me getting roles because one casting director called my, called my manager and said, we loved Margaret in The Color Purple, but we really need someone who can speak good grammar.
What?
Oh, yes.
Not seeing that was the character.
I'm acting. I was acting.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm a college graduate.
Yes, yes.
Or you remember the backlash that Steven Spielberg had at that time. Everybody hated him. All the directors were so jealous and envious of him. He, out of 13 nominations that the film got, he didn't get nominated. So what does that tell you? I would go in on an interview, and this one director, this is for TV, this one director had so much venom, I could just sense it. He says, oh, well, you worked for Steven Spielberg. You're used to all those takes. And I said, look, I did black exploitation films before I ever worked with Steven Spielberg. I did television. You know how fast-paced this is. I said, now, I was lucky with blaxploitation films that if I got to do more than two takes, I was happy.
Yes.
I always prayed for there to be a sound problem or lights or something so that you could do it. And I could do it in one take, but, you know, you want to do even better, you know.
Exactly. And the more
takes. And I could do it in
listeners.
One take because I had studied.
Mm-hmm.
I came from stage.
Exactly.
So I just said, hey, if you have a beef with Steven Spielberg, take it out on him, not me.
Not you. That's right. And for our listeners, what we're talking about is that oftentimes when you're doing television or film, and particularly if you're doing film, you may do take after take after take.
Yeah.
And some directors.
Mm-hmm. We got 17 takes, so you've got to be good. I mean,
you've got to be good.
By the end of 17 takes,
you've nailed it.
Absolutely.
You've nailed it. So that's what we're talking about. And, you know, speaking of which, since you are a stage, television, and film actor, which medium do you most enjoy and why, Margaret?
Oh, I most enjoy stage. And
you
I'll tell
do.
You, the reason why is because, number one, I can play roles that I probably would never get cast in on film.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, it's like casting people see you do one role and they want to type you over and
yeah.
over. You don't get a chance to show different abilities, different sides of you.
Mm-hmm.
So with stage, not only can you do a role that you probably wouldn't get cast for, as I mentioned, but you can also improve night after night after
that's
night.
Right.
And that's why I love going to opening night and closing night, because by the time you see what the actors have done with the role, how they've grown and gelled and
mm-hmm.
and really made that role so rich.
Yes.
It's like a different play. It's so much better.
Exactly. And it takes time to do that. And with film, it's moving so fast.
Oh, yeah.
And you've
And television is the worst, because all you do, they do, the director, all he does is say, okay, now on this line, I want you to move over here and there and stop there and then continue here. They just block you,
yes.
and that's it. So television, they hire strong actors that they know will nail it. Because
exactly.
they're not going to direct you. And half the time, they don't know how to direct you.
Right.
With
right.
all the nepotism.
Yes. So for our listeners, you're getting an inside scoop on how this world that we're in really kind of works.
But that's not all television.
It's not,
I love Boardwalk.
Yeah,
and
it's not as magical as it may seem in terms of the process, but it is magical in terms of the opportunities that we have to create the characters, to breathe life into them, and to really be able to look at the work we've created and say, this is something I'm very proud of. So it's a
Absolutely.
Process. But at
yeah.
the end of the day, when we are able to do that, it makes it all so worth it.
Absolutely.
Now, I know that in terms of stage, I know that you got an L.A. Drama Critics Circle Award for performance in a major role, and that was in the play Does a Tiger Wear a Necktie? What
yeah.
role did you play in that, Margaret?
I've
never
believe
seen the
it was
play.
Lin-
I know the title, but I haven't seen
Linda,
it.
Linda, and it was a play that played in New York, I believe, that made De Niro pretty. I think it was a springboard for him, the role that he played.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened for me was that Clint Eastwood came to the show that I was mm-hmm. performing in, and he was there to see a male actor. But apparently it didn't work out for that actor. He saw me and cast me in Magnum Force. Now, I had a cameo role in that film, but that's what once I could go in on a television interview and say I worked with Clint. Oh, I just
exactly.
got the role. You know, it was.
He's so loved in the industry.
So, oh, yes, absolutely. I didn't love his chair that he was talking about.
Well, that's a whole other subject, but as an actor, we'll talk about
as
him as
an actor,
not
yes.
as politics.
And he's very, very talented, a very talented
yes, he
man.
Is. Yes, he is. Wow. Now,
so that's what started my TV career. I did a lot of TV, but what supported me, and young people out there who want to get in the business,
mm-hmm.
remember, if you didn't hear the earlier segment, I taught school first. I had a means. I had a way of supporting myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I studied. So when I got a break, I was ready.
You were ready.
In this town, in Hollywood, there's long memory. People have elephant memories if you don't do well. The casting people remember forever. Now, what they don't remember so well is that you did well. Now,
mm-hmm.
cast me again, please.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's why we want to always train, study.
Because it's longevity.
Prepare. Mm-hmm.
And I tell people, don't get in the business unless it's a passion. I mean, because don't think that you're going to be a big star. You have to love the process. You have to love doing the work. And I did the work for I don't know how many years for free.
Mm-hmm.
Doing free theater. It was community theater, getting the experience, getting being comfortable on stage in being the character without being aware that there's an audience other than when there's laughter and you have to stop, you know. It's very important to know your craft so that when you get that good break, you can do it.
You're absolutely ready. Yes. Now, I wanted to ask you... And you have done a lot of television. I looked at all your credits. They're really impressive. Which role challenged you most in terms of TV?
In TV? Oh,
mm-hmm.
boy. Let's see.
Was there any that particularly challenged and stretched you?
Well, it's the conditions of having to work, I think, that's been most challenging for me. Well, the weather. I mean, we work with horrible weather, even with Magnum Force, there's a little scene with me in the back seat of a cab, and my pimp gets in the cab, and there's a little conversation. Well, we're driving all around San Francisco, the wharf, and it's freezing.
Oh, it's so cold.
And I have this evening dress on. I think my chill bumps were bigger than my breast. It's supposed to be a summer night. So now I'm trying to, make sure my... You know when you're so cold that your teeth chatter involuntarily?
I sure do.
Well, that's when I say about training. You've got to focus so much on the character that none of that stuff happens.
Exactly. Rising and above... Rise
above. I mean, in the same way with Color Purple. I mean, you see all that snow, and it was 100 and something degrees out there. We had people passing out, grips, and some people had heat stroke, had to go to the hospital.
Really? Now that was in North Carolina, right?
Yeah, that's fake snow we were working in.
I had
that raccoon coat on, and
must have been hot.
The age makeup was so thick that these gnats would get stuck in my makeup and start trying to, they would kind of start going down into the makeup. And I'm trying to focus on the character and not have to, you know, slap at it because then you ruin the scene.
Exactly.
So those
are the kinds of things that... as actors, can challenge us, and so I see what you're saying in terms of conditions, because at the end of the day, none of that can show up on film. None of that can show up
absolutely.
On tape. None of that can be known.
Your eyes are so important. You've got to be thinking in the moment. That's what makes film so special.
And oftentimes they have wonderful close-ups, so... It really does mean that we've got to be aware of that camera and yet at the same time be very relaxed so that we look and come off very naturally. Now, I know you've worked with a lot of established actors. I looked at a lot of the names. Who is one that you most learn from and why as an actor?
I would say, I mean, I have to, there was something very challenging about working with Richard Pryor.
Ah.
Because prior to working with him, I really hadn't done comedy other than in my comedy workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of my television experience had been, you memorize the lines and you know exactly what you're going to do and da-da-da-da, and it's not, you know, it's so different from stage television. You know,
yeah.
You're not really, you don't really get to warm up with your characters, with the other actors, and going over and over again. You just get out there and you do it.
Right.
So you almost have every nuance memorized. You know what you're going to do. Because you can only do two or three takes for television. So, but with Richard Pryor, this was a feature film. I think it was a B film when I look at it now. But
Which
he,
Way Is Up is the film, right?
Which Way Is Up.
Yeah.
And he was so spontaneous. And the very first scene that we shot, we're about to, Michael Schultz was the director, and he was about to say action, you know, which means we start filming. And
uh-huh.
Richard, just before he said action, Richard went up to Michael and says, oh, I have an idea. I'm going to do such and such and such and such. And then when such and such happens, I'm going to do da-da. And Michael starts laughing. He says, yeah, that's a good thing. And so Richard walks away and goes to where he's supposed to be positioned. I said, well, Richard, then what do I do? He says, I don't know.
Richard said, take care of yourself. I'm doing what I got to do.
So I said, oh, my God. And then there was something that
happened. Oh, that's
that,
funny.
Something happened that allowed me time to go to my trailer. And I just got on my knees. I was just panicked.
Mm.
I said, oh, God, please let me just take away my fear. And then I had to pretend I'm just going to be what I do in class.
Ah.
In your what do we call it? When you're just spontaneous, you don't know what's going to happen.
Improvisation.
Just, improvisational.
Yes.
Theater. Thank
yes.
you. I said I just have to remember that I am Annie Mae, and I'm going to think Annie Mae, be
mm-hmm.
Annie Mae, respond
mm-hmm.
as Annie Mae, and
there
that's where training comes in, people.
And
the
that's the key to improvisation:
listening.
Being in the moment. And really acting in general, being in the moment.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
you can't ever be thinking, oh, what am I going to say or whatever. You have to be so much that character that whatever happens, you're going to respond as that character would
and
respond.
And honestly. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think that good acting really is based in listening, and that 80% of acting is listening. So if
mm-hmm.
we're really listening, we're in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're in the moment, we don't worry about what the next line is. We don't worry about what we're going to do next.
Absolutely.
We're just very organically responding to whatever is given us.
So,
and that's
you
exactly,
me,
it sounds like, what you ended up doing, and you rose above that fear.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And but I got the confidence from God, of course, but also having studied improvisational theater.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew what to do. At least I have the tools. And so all what I had to focus on is not being so nervous that I couldn't channel my tools properly.
Exactly. And rather use them. I cannot believe our time is almost up, but I want to make sure that I take a moment to have you say a word about your experience working on the Obama campaign. I know.
Oh, okay. It was a humbling experience and an exciting one and a challenging one, exhausting because, I was invited to do something as a celebrity and it was only going to be for the weekend. And so the Chicago office, when they spoke to me, I said, well, hey, I don't want to just do that. Let me stay and knock on doors. I want to be a part of it. And I have a place to stay, so you don't have to put me up in a hotel or anything. And so they let me do that. And so because of the paperwork that we had to hand in every day, I knocked on several hundred doors. And when
That's
I
amazing.
Say it was humbling, because we were after the people who were unlikely voters.
And that's what surprised everyone with that election, because
we went into abandoned homes and found people, registered voters who had given up and said, "Hey, come on, you can do this. You are important. Your vote is important, and we're going to take you to the polls." And people love our president, Adela. I've walked with people who were from France, Germany, Canada.
Amazing. They're booting us off. I am so glad that you were a part of that, and more importantly, that he won. We backed him.
Absolutely.
So we thank all of our listeners. Margaret, I so thank you for being with me today. I wish we had another hour. The time went so fast.
Yeah.
And so as we close, I would just like to say, yes?
Oh, can I just remind everybody, don't just not participate in the next elections. Our congressmen, whoever we elect for that, and for the Senate positions, all those positions are Indians for our president. We need to vote the Democratic ticket. Okay, that's
absolutely. So thank you. And everyone, look out for Margaret on BET in January in the new upcoming series, Being Mary Jane. And to my listeners, you are listening to Adela on Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. I'd like to hear from you and find out what you thought about today's show. You can reach me on the website at www.adelabarnes.com. Also, help keep Blake Radio on the air by becoming a subscriber today. And remember to dance, dance, dance like nobody's watching. And enjoy your miracle today. Thank you, Martin.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.